to some areas of the halachas of milchix. We'll see what we can cover in an hour. I don't want to run through everything. I want to start with some of the halachas. The basic halachas, the halacha of waiting 6 hours between milchix and fleishix. And some connections which are maybe not which are relevant that the people need to know. So the halachas are minig is our minig is different from hagah, but our minig is the shulchan aruch minig. Way the shulchan aruch presents it, the minig is to wait 6 hours between eating fleishix and then eating milchix afterwards. It applies even to eating poultry. If a person would taste, put meat in his mouth or in their mouth, her mouth. And not chew it, and not swallow it. You don't have to wait. If a person wants to taste a recipe, the fleishig recipe, and just by putting it in your mouth, if you don't chew it, and then you don't swallow it, you do not have to wait. You do if you want to eat milchus afterwards. So there is a din of kinuch v'adachol. We'll talk about kinuch and adachol later on. If a person chewed it and did not swallow it, or swallow it and did not chew it, then you have to wait. But if you do not chew and not swallow, you don't have to wait.
How do you not chew or swallow?
It's a chicken soup in your mouth. You just taste it and you spit it out.
You have to wash out your mouth or something after?
Well, we'll talk about the halachas of kinuch. We will talk about kinuch hadocha later on. Okay. Next point. If a person is not sure if the 6 hours have passed, they're not sure. Remember, sometime around 1:30, maybe 2 o'clock, it's 7:30, maybe 8 o'clock. You have to wait till you know for sure that you reach the time. Okay. Common question which is asked, you take something which is parah, you cook it in a fleishik pot, and the pot has been used, it's called a benyom, it's been used in the last 24 hours, so it has a fleishik of flavor in it. So there is fleishik of flavor in this food, which is a parah, ostensibly. So you cannot eat that food directly with milchix, but you do not have to wait 24 hours, you have to wait 6 hours afterwards, you have to wait 24 hours, sure not. Okay, now let's say, however, which is the case with Shulchan Aruch talks about, a person would take a food which is cooked directly with meat, a person takes a potato out of the cholent, and obviously you have to wait 6 hours. A person is in their 6 hour period, and so, okay, two scenarios. Scenario one, so what makes something fleishig? Something is fleishig. So a person takes a fleishig, a knife, cuts an onion. So that onion is now fleishig. They eat the onion. They do not need to wait 24 hours. I've got to stop that. They need to wait 6 hours. They do not need to wait. I'm thinking benyomos. So they do not need to wait 6 hours. Change the case. They ate fleishig. And there's an onion which is cut with a milchig knife. It's a milchig onion. You cannot eat that onion until the 6 hours pass. So in the first case, it does not make you fleishig. The second scenario, where you already are fleishig, then you can't have a davar charev type of a situation, which is milchig. Okay. A person goes into Ben Yehuda and gets, the Ben Yehuda wouldn't be relevant. A person goes into Max's and they get French fries. That's all they have is French fries. So you have to wait 6 hours. Because those French fries are fried in oil, deep fried in oil, and that same oil is used to deep fry chicken, etc. So that's actually in the oil, which that's mamash fleishig. It's a mamash fleishig type of a French fry. So in that situation, you would need to wait 6 hours. Vice versa, French fries, which are from Ben Yehuda, are mamash milchik, so you couldn't eat it with, they're mamash milchik, you couldn't eat it together with something else, which is a person wants a separate cooking milchik, whatever, and they're in there 6 hours. They say, well, maybe I'm ushered to start preparing milchik because I might come to eat it. No, that's not true. It's mutter. How long the children have to wait? How long the children have to wait? The halachas of waiting. So under the age of three, the halachas, there's no way that after they've had fleishig, they can milk it right away. The only thing is we should wash off their faces. They shouldn't be have all the chicken on their face while they're eating milk. But wash off their faces. They should remove all of the whatever's on their face, and then you can give them milk. Okay, from the age of 3 and up, if they start once they reach the age where they can start understanding the idea that there's something fleishig, something milchig, you can't have them together. So it is preferred in halacha that you should wait an hour. and kinuach and hadacha, which again we'll explain what kinuach and hadacha are. In a case from the age of 9, 10, and onwards, we should have the children waiting 6 hours. But even over there, even in case of a child, which there's a reason, there's something they felt was important for their health, etc., to have milchik, you can make them for 1 hour, with 1 hour for the children in that situation. And again, with kinuach and hadacha, which we'll talk about kinuach and hadacha. Okay, so that's the waiting period. Okay, well, that's the waiting period for inflation of the milchik. I want to do this. Person wants to switch, go from milchik to fleishigs. So the mikra, then you can wait. Person can go immediately from milchik to fleishigs. Immediately from milchik to fleishigs. There are some people which are makbid to wait an hour or half an hour. There's such a hakpada. And there's some people which are makbid to end the meal, which means to say bracha achrona, bench, alamichya, whatever it would be. Do not eat both in the same meal. You're not eating milchik and fleishigs in the same meal. The Ramah,
is that the din, or is that like what some people do?
Well, so it's an interesting question. So the Ramah says not like that. The Ramah says you do not need to do that. And the Ramah and the Mishapura follow that. So, actually, there's a fascinating Ramah, just you should know it, that exists. The Ramah says, why do we eat milchiks on shuls? This is the Ramah's explanation. Ramah is the source of our Menhagim. And the Ramah explains why we eat milchiks on shuls. Most people do not know what the Ramah's reason is. Okay? So, just at least you should know that the Ramah exists. The Ramah says, because on Shavuos we bring a korban called the She'alecha, and we want to make a zecher for the She'alecha by having two breads. So how do you have two breads? Well, it's very simple. You start your meal with milchik, and you eat a meal with milchik with the bread, so you can't use that bread for fleishig. In the middle of the meal you switch to fleishig, so you're forced to use a second loaf of bread. So you end up eating two loaves of bread. So then by having milchiks and then fleishigs, you end up with two loaves of bread, and that's why we have milchiks, in order to remember the two loaves of bread on Shavuos. That's why we have milchiks on Shavuos, according to Ramah. Okay. So the Ramah does not say that you have to bench in the middle. And the Mishnah Berurah also says like that. However, the Shach says that you should bench in the middle. So those who follow the Mishnah Berurah, I actually follow the Mishnah Berurah on this one, and I say you do not have to say bracha in the middle. That's what I do with Shavuos morning the first day. We wash, we have milchiks, then we switch, and we have flesh in the middle of the meal. Right? And that's what Moses said, that's the minig.
Do you have to have flesh?
This is not a yom tov shir. This is a mevil. That's a machlokes.
Okay.
So you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, but it is a machlokes. Mr. Burr says it's a mitzvah to have flesh. Yes. Okay. I didn't paskin, I just thought what Mishnah Berurah says. Okay. Okay. In order to switch, you're going to need to do four things. But anytime a person is switching from milchiks to fleishigs, the person is going to do four things. They're going to do tikinuach and hadacha and rechitz. They have to wash their hands and they have to change the tablecloth. So the four things again are kinuach and hadacha, rechitzas yadayim, washing your hands, and shinui ma'amapa, you have to change the tablecloth. Okay, so let's go through the lochas of kinuach and hadacha and rechitzas yadayim, and the tablecloth is pretty, is I think, is self-understood. So the halacha, which is called kinuach, so the Shulchan Aruch says a person has to clean out their mouth well. So a person wants to go from milchiks to fleishigs, so they take something which is a part of a food, and we'll see there's some limitations with most part of a foods. You should chew it well, or you should move it around your mouth and chew it well, and you swallow it, and that's it. What may you not use? The Shulchan Aruch gives us three things you may not use for the purpose of kinuach, of cleaning out your mouth. The three things it gives are dates. Some morim do not seem to stick, and they do not take out the particles well. Flour, if for whatever reason you want to use some flour, to eat, you know, not the petals, but you know, as in wheat. Not cooked, baked items are fine, but flour is not acceptable. And leafy green vegetables. They've been green vegetables. So somebody asked me if they wanted to use for kinuach, a spinach something or other with a, like a
salad.
But it was, I said, no, you can't use the vegan vegetables. So what if I make it like a bereka with some mazonos around it? That's fine. Okay. That's quinoa. Hadocha, so a person has to watch out their mouth also, so that you can use any liquid for that. There is a Ritchivager. Ritchivager says it's preferred in halacha to use an alcoholic beverage. I'm not saying you should do that. Whatever Rabbi said, but I sure you should drink alcohol. You know, that's all I need. But the halacha is it maker halacha. It's any liquid.
You need to eat and drink.
Eat and drink. Between milchus and flesh, you need to eat and drink. Okay. Now, how long does the time lapse have to be? Well, you don't have to do this. Okay. So I have milchus for breakfast, and I'm having flesh for lunch. But it's 3 hours in the middle. So do I need to do? At what point do I no longer need to do kinoch and adocha? So the assumption is a half an hour to an hour later, you do not need to do kinoch and adocha. In the case of a person, we'll be switching over, like, person, it's more like, I think, by teenagers, like, you know, so they start with their milk, and say, oh, I want that also, you're eating flesh, the kid's eating milk, can I have some of that also? Yeah, then you have to do kinoch and adocha, right? So in that situation, some adults are still teenagers at heart, that's good. So again, you take a liquid in your mouth, and you drink it down.
You also have to eat something, though.
So you have to do kinoa and hadocha, correct. The order is not ma'akev. You can do one before, either one goes first. There seems to be some indication that it would make sense to do kinoa first before hadocha. You cannot do both simultaneously, though. The order has to be one and then the other. Either one, but it has to be one and then the other. There is a halacha brachitza. You have to wash your hands. It's not a machitza with a kais. You just have to wash your hands. And the halacha is, the Aruch HaShulchan says, if you didn't touch the food, you use the fork and a knife, etc., you do not need to wash your hands. So in the case of a person would eat milchiks without touching the food and they want to switch to fleshiks, they would do kinoch and adocha. If they did not touch the food, they do not need to wash their hands. Even if they did touch the food, the shach says that you do not need to use soap, you just need to wash your hands off with water and that's sufficient. And the last point, obviously, is you have to change the tablecloth. You don't want any particles left from the milchiks going into the fleshiks. The one place where we have an issue of going from milchiks to fleshiks that you'd have to wait is hard cheese. Right, so the definition of hard cheese is that itself is there's some element of a question what it is. In general, what it's understood to mean that a cheese which hardens to the point that normally to eat it, you're going to grate it or do something to that. So Parmesan is considered to be, halacha is going to be a hard cheese. A Swiss cheese, which is aged, if it's aged for a while, it's considered a hard cheese. How long? Some say 6 months, some say a year. There's a cheese called Romano, which I have no idea what it looks like. I mean, it looks like a cheese, probably. But after that, you lose me. An American cheese, mozzarella cheese, Munster cheese, those are not considered, those are considered soft cheeses for this purpose. And obviously the acid-based, those are casein-based cheeses, but the acid-based cheeses for sure are considered like your soft cheese, your cream cheese, and cottage cheese, and those type of things. Farmer cheese, that's definitely considered soft cheese for this purpose. Okay. So that's the person wants to change from, we went from fleshiks to milchiks, milchiks to fleshiks. Good. Now, a person wants to sit down and eat a fleshig meal, a person wants to sit down and eat a milchig meal. Yes.
Okay, so two things. First thing is, I heard that if you are cooking with the hard cheese, like with Parmesan, that it's okay. Have you heard anything?
That is a machlokes. Okay. Well, if it's softened, like through cooking, it doesn't become mutter.
Okay, fine. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
That's okay. And then, do you need to do kinuach or hadacha between fish and meat?
So between fish and meat, there's also halacha, kinuach, and hadacha. Over there, it's the eager place where the kinuach and hadacha was mentioned in halacha between with case going from milchus to fleshes. That's where it's mentioned in halacha. Or fleshes the milchus, but since we wait 6 hours, it becomes an irrelevant point.
Can you go back and forth, like, I don't know, you go to like the dinner that they had whatever. So, can you go back and forth, have like a little bit of fish, and then you walk over to the meat table, you take the vegetables in between and water, and then you go eat, and then you go back, oh, that fish was really good, and then you go back to the fish table.
Yes,
or
you could do that, as long as you do kinoch and adocha
between. Okay.
Person wants to sit down and they want to eat a fleishig meal, and it's been a very hard day, a very long day, and there's still some milchaka things sitting there on the table. So you're sitting down to a fleishig meal. There's milchaka within your reach. So you cannot do that because you're afraid you might, by mistake, take some of the milchaka and eat it with the fleishigs. Or alternatively, the opposite. So you still have something on the table, unless you make some type of arrangement to remind you that you cannot be eating that. Unless you make some type of a hecker. Let's say it's a case that even the item isn't even opened. You came in shopping. You put down some stuff on the table. You have this closed package of cheese, and you sit down. You sit down your supper, and you eat a piece of chicken. So you don't have a problem. There's a closed package of cheese on the table. So even though it's closed, that also would be a problem. You have to make some type of a hecker to remind you. So what is considered a hecker? We'll see in a moment. Now, even if two people are eating, this is more common. People know this. If one person eating milk, it's one person eating fleishigs, you have to make a hecker. But the hecker is even when you're eating by yourself. In other words, it's a kiddush by the case. The more says it's a kiddush by the case, maybe each one will remind the other one not to eat it. So no, even if two people, you still need a hecker. But by one person, for sure, you need something to remind you. If two people are eating together and one's eating milk and one is eating fleishigs, you have to do something to address this issue. We're afraid that one person might share with the other one, etc. So if they are at a large table and they can't reach each other, right? So one person is sitting at one person at the other end, so that would be mutter, because you can't just reach out and get it. By the time the person gets up to go to get it, they'll remember they shouldn't be taking that. If they're not good friends, if they don't know each other, you know, you sit down, let's say, at a park bench, you sit down on a park bench, you sit down in a restaurant and you want to take out your one of these public places where they have tables, you sit down, you pull out your meal, and the person across that you was sitting on eating, I don't know the guy, and there's some guy before, I'm not going to take any food from him, I don't know who he is. There's no problem. Either they're eating kosher, it's a big sign, kosher on it, you're not going to take from them. This halacha doesn't apply to, there's no issue when it comes to tray for food. Doesn't apply to the tray for food because you're not afraid you're going to mistake him and take the tray for food. The only issue is it's kosher, but it's milk and inflation that we're worried about. Let's say a person ate fleishigs and he can't eat milk and his friend is eating milk because he's not eating right now. He wants to sit down at the table next to he's sitting at the table not eating. There's all this beautiful milk and things sitting on the table because their friend is eating milk, because that's fine. Right? So, because even though they can't eat milk, but they're not in the eating process, they're not afraid they're going to forget and take something which is milk. So what's a valid hecker? What's considered a valid hecker? Is it something there which doesn't belong there? Something which doesn't belong there. So in the case where two people are eating, or something one person is eating, there's something there which is be between them, between the two people, or between the person and the item which is not supposed to be eaten, as a reminder. The best thing is just take it off the table, but that's not always... where to put it in the fridge yet. So you put some type of item which is not normally on the table, or even if it's normally on the table, it's not normally in between the two people. So a person takes, you have a vase which is in the middle of the table, normally you put it between the two people, that's a valid hecker. It's a valid reminder to separate. The same halachas you have by the regards to the halachas of Nida as a hecker, that would be the same halachas over here, something which would not normally be there. Even if it's a food, you're not eating for the meal. So a person, nobody's watching right now. There's a bread basket on the table. You pull the bread basket between the person eating flesh and the person eating milk. So that is that valid reminder. Both people should know that's there for that purpose. Placemats. So for one person's eating on, you can eat on two separate. If you're eating on one person's on the tablecloth, one person's on the table, one person's on the tablecloth with a placemat, one person's on the tablecloth without a placemat. They're eating on different surfaces. That is sufficient.
If they're both eating on placemats, it's not okay.
Yes, each one's eating each one a separate placemat. There is one question which is raised: that people normally always eat on placemats. So does that act as a valid reminder? That, if they're eating on placemats because the purpose of the placemats is to remind them of inflation. So that's not that's not the question. Some people, fancier, they have this beautiful fancy set of placemats and they want to use that. So that's a question which is raised. But the fact that there's placemats, that should be sufficient. Okay. This holish only applies that you're eating at a table. So I'm sitting on a plane or sitting on a bus, and you know, it's a frum bus, and the person next to me is having their cheese sandwich, and I'm having my fleishig sandwich. That's fine, even though I know the person, but we're not sitting at a table together. They did not ask it. They only asked it together in a case of sitting on a table. Okay. I guess it's relevant on the plane sometimes that they serve different types of dinners and milkless inflations. Okay, new topic. Chazal asked milk of bread. Chazal asked, you can't make bread milkless, you can't make bread flations, which is less common. But you can't make milchuk bread. Now the halachah, I want to go through those halachas. There are some heterim. Let's go through the whole thing. If you have questions, hold on to them. Okay, the halachah is that it's also even b'diavad. If you made milchuk bread, you cannot eat it. It's not only is it issur to make it, you cannot use that milchuk bread. That's it. You can give it to the goy, without a big sign that says it's kosher. If you resell it on the Jew, right? You give it to him. You know, throw it out. Let's say you didn't intend to make milchuk bread. Milk fell in by mistake, and that you realize, you know, you ayvei taka ayvei. There's milk in the bread. Still lost. You cannot use that bread. Okay. Let's say the issue over here was you had a milchuk keli, which was used for milk in the last 24 hours, and I want to bake in that, or I want to make some type of a bread in that to use with a fleishiger meal. I cannot do that. That's a lach of something which is, and even though it's a not bar not, it means it's, the flavor went into the wall, the flavor came out of the wall, I can't make that, I'm an Ashkenazi, I cannot make that lachatchila to eat with fleishigs. That situation, if you did make it already, that would be mutter to use. If you have no other keli to use, it would be mutter lachatchila to use that. Okay. What are the teirim which allow us to have milchuka bread? So the first heter is, if you only make enough to be used for one day, it's permitted. That heter only applies if you use it that day. You can't freeze it. You can't make, well, I'll make one day's worth for shuas the first day, and I'll put it in the freezer, I'll put a lot on shuas. No. It means you made it that day. The point is, you might forget. But right now, you made it that day, and
so
you use it right that day.
Shavuos chala now.
What?
If I want to make milchuk shavuos chala, I can't make it now.
Correct. Well, based on the first heter is that it has to be used that, it has to be the amount which is worth for one day. Now, that'll work for the amount of people which is relevant for. If it's one person, it'll be a little roll. If it's, you know, if it's 10 people, it'll be a bigger, larger one. But the amount is, it's an amount which is made for one, to be consumed in one day. Okay. Number two is, there's a heter of, if it's nicker. We do it in a way which is clear that it's milchuk. So you make it in a certain shape, you make it into some type of a indication on the bread that this bread is a milchuk bread. Now, it has to be something which is visible throughout the bread. Because part of our problem is that we'll use part of the bread and have leftovers. But by the time I get the leftovers, it's no longer visible that the hacker, so that I didn't solve my problem. So it has to be that wherever I cut my bread, like, you know, like the stones from the sneh, you know, from the burning bush in the Har Sinai. You keep breaking, they still look like with the sign of the burning bush on them, you know. So that's how you got to do your bread. You got to do it in such a way that whatever you do, it's going to still have that hacker, that it's milk and good bread.
Do you have any suggestions?
Do I have any suggestions? No.
Did you just put it in a bag that's marked dairy?
No. Next, heter is it's only valid if you do it before you bake it. It has to be because once you make milchuk bread is also because I'll ask for milchuk bread. That's it. So I can't say afterwards, well, I'll put it in a container and say that it says milchuk on it. It doesn't help. It has to be made, even if I go and put a thing on the bread itself afterwards, it doesn't help. Once you made it milchuk, because I'll ask for it.
Let's say you put something specific in the bread that you would never put in any other bread, like let's say you have like a raisin, nut, cinnamon, whatever, and you make it in a crescent shape so that no matter where you cut, it would be very obvious.
Okay.
But the thing like calls for milk. And you can do it?
Sounds like it.
Okay.
Okay. Now the third heter, they only allow to things which are eaten with meat normally. So bread, it's very common you eat bread together with your meat meal. Most people don't have cupcakes together with the roast. They don't have cake together with the roast. So the issue doesn't apply to cakes and to cookies, etc. It applies only to bread. Because the issue was, you might come to actually eat it with the meat. Which is why you have all those OUD, all the OUD cooks, cakes, etc. Now, OUD bread is a whole different ballgame. Now, how does OUD bread permitted? Well, if the goy, the company is a goyish company, so OUD bread, they can make milchiger bread. They don't want Isser to make milchiger bread, right? So that's why the. But if you'd have a Jewish bakery, if they want to make milchiger bread, they have to do it in such a way that it's obvious that it's milchiger. They have this halacha.
Just one step back before, you were talking about making the pot of bread in a delicious pan, and then you shouldn't eat that with a milchiger.
Right.
Right. So, if you line a pan, like a parchment paper or a foil or something, is that okay?
Parchment paper is not, because there's a certain amount which goes through the parchment paper, etc. If you line the pan with, the question is the chatchila. So the chatchila, you know, the b'nei eved it's mutter, but the case of the chatchila, if you line it with two, you would say you'd have two layers of lining that would be mutter. Okay. Just one point about if you have shirayim, so you want to use bread which is left over from a fleishig meal to use it for milchig meal or vice versa. Your bread left over from a milchig meal, you want to use it for a fleishig meal. So it's mutter to use the leftover bread, assuming that you know the following: that number one, that the knife you used to cut it was a clean knife. Doesn't have to be a parva knife; it could be even a fleishig knife, as long as it was clean. But you know that it was a clean knife. There is a mentioned in halacha that it's preferred to have a par of a bread knife in order to avoid this issue of sometimes using a non-clean knife and then the leftover bread using it for the next meal, which is a different type of gender. But mikra din, a person, you know, they can't find their power of a bread knife, so they want to pull out a clean flesh sugar knife and cut the bread. That's fine, even if in the middle of a milchiger meal, they could do that. It's clean. The bread should be kept in a place where it's not immediately adjacent to the meat or milk, whatever the case of the meat meal was. That's why if you have it in the tray, that's usually considered that safe. Shulchan Aruch says you have to look over the bread and see that it's clean. You should check it to make sure that there's no indication. So you need all three. So the clean knife, it wasn't next to it, and you checked it. A person served a par of a dish by a fleishig meal, and they have some leftovers from the par of a dish. They want to use that par of a dish now to serve for a milchiger meal. They put a kugel out by the, it was cooked, it was baked par of, cooked par of, they put it out by the fleishig meal. Now they want to serve it by the next meal, which is a milchiger meal. Is that mutter? So mikra din is mutter. If some of the serving utensils that you used were their own, people weren't taking their fork from their plate and sticking into the. Well, it didn't only touch that side, not this side. That you don't want to get involved with. You know, yeah, I stuck my fork in, which is a fleshy fork, but I only touched the top and not the bottom. You shouldn't do that. If there was a serving utensil in the container or which is his own serving utensil, so nobody was. And of course, if you have little kids, there's no guarantee that serving utensil remains par, you know, because yeah, they put it on the plate, smack it to the middle of the meat sauce, you know, and they put it back into the salad. That's like guaranteed, right? So I'm not, you know, and some adults do that too, but the mice is very much even weaker than its mutter because of this issue that people aren't necessarily watching what they're doing. You know, that it's very possible. So it's proper not to eat it together with a meal of the other gender because of this issue. So he suggests, because of this concern, you don't know what went in there, you don't know what came out of there, the serving utensils, unless you were sitting the whole meal watching it because you really planned to use it afterwards. So you're sitting there watching it. So Marcia suggests you should not do that. Okay, that is the non-oven issues, non-oven issues for the, I mean, I guess it's baking, but you know, the milk, the standard, I think, people when they hear the shiras on milchus and fleishes, they think about, you know, milchus ovens and fleishes ovens. So we'll cover that also. Interesting. I actually plan to spend more time on this and just focus on this. My wife said they're exploiting the milchus oven, fleishes oven. You got to talk about that also. I said okay. Got to talk about it. We'll talk about it. Okay, so the Bereshit created the everything which Bereshit created, he created Bishul Yisrael, so he created self-cleaning ovens. Okay, so the Bereshit created self-cleaning ovens. Self-cleaning ovens are a wonderful invention. You want milchiks and then fleishiks, fleishiks and milchiks, you can kasher self-cleaning, even though there's a minute we do not kasher from milchiks to fleishiks. I can't, you know, the Mogen Rum says, I have a great idea. Listen, you know, I don't really eat, I'm not a very rich person, I can't afford to have hot meals every day anyway. So I'll buy one set of cutlery. I use it on Sunday for milchiks. Monday, don't use it for anything hot. Wait 24 hours, kasher it. Monday night and Tuesday, I'll use it for fleishiks. I'll wait till Wednesday, I'll kasher back the milchiks. So Friday afternoon, I'll kasher it and use it for fleishiks. You know, like, you know, you're not going to remember to wait 24 hours at some point in time. Right? You're not going to remember to wait 24 hours at some point in time, and you end up using this thing for milchiks and then fleishiks and milchiks. So we don't allow you to go back milchiks and fleishiks and milchiks. The exception is an oven. So you want to kasher your oven. It's a bona fide act of being kashering it. So you want to go kasher it on Sunday for milchiks. The fleishes, you're allowed to do that. So a person wants to go back and forth with a self-cleaning oven to kasher both directions. That's wonderful. The reason why it's so is because it's not that this halacha applies to hagola. Hagola requires 24 hours. Self-cleaning is libun. Libun does not require 24 hours. So mikir adin. So even if you forget your 24 hours, wouldn't be a problem anyway. So that's why, because it's Liman, it's not Hagola, you can go back and forth. Okay, so the person is not going back and forth, and you don't have a self-cleaning oven, and I want to point out what's known as a continuous cleaning oven is a very bad idea. It doesn't have this halacha, doesn't have this hetter, actually has many problems in halacha, it's very osur. It might be osur because it's a cheris, it's made out of cheris. And it's a specially treated type of cheres, which everything is supposed to slough off, but halachically we assume that there are blias, etc., and it's a major headache. So, I don't know, they think that hopefully they look like they stopped making them for the most part, so that's good. Okay. There are three halachas we have to be worried about when we're talking about going from using the oven for milchiks and then fleishes the milchiks. Okay, I want to make a cheesecake in my oven, but I use the oven for fleishiks. What do I have to do? There are three things I have to be aware of. In halacha, the one issue is that if there's any actual residue, there's actual end, there's any residue of the fleishes going to milchiks or milchiks going to fleishig. That's one area which you have to talk about. The second area which you have to talk about is what some which is called halacha recha milsa, that a smell has a halachic significance. So the issue of milchiks fleishig, the smell from one to the other, is that a problem? We'll see what that is. And the third thing is the zeya. The most common issue which you have to deal with is the zeya issue. So I want to, let's talk about Reicha Milsa, because that's the shortest one. We'll talk about that first. We paskin that Reicha Milsa is only the Chachila, not Bidiyabit, which means the Chachila, you cannot bake milchus and fleishes in the oven at the same time. Even though they're both dry, etc., we don't do milchus and fleishes in the oven at the same time, because there is a Reach, two of both of them coming together, and the Chachila, that's also Bidiyabit's mutter. But chachilah tzasur, number one. Number two, the halach of recha, we hope, is b'di'evit, it would only be also by his case of Yisuri Hanoa. Now, Basu B'chol was also by Hanoa, that's after it's Basu B'chol, but it's not Basu B'chol yet. So the example, which is very, you know, so it's Pesach, and, you know, Chometz is also by Hanoa. So, I have this situation. There used to be a donut factory right across the Philadelphia bridge over there on the way from my father-in-law's house to the shul. And an overpowering smell of donut, fresh donuts being baked. And I'm going to my in-laws for Pesach, of course, and you walk right over the bridge, right past it, within 5 feet of this bakery, the smell of chametz. You know, usher. You can't take that smell. It's only Reicha. Reicha's also. Reicha Milsa. He got Reicha Milsa. That's also. Anything else? No, you cannot do that. Now, are you allowed to go that route? Is the next question. So that's an interesting question, which fascinating halachic issue. If you have another option, halachically, you're really supposed to go take another option. What's called another option? Okay, that's a whole different discussion. But the second area,
it's not kosher. Like if
that kosher is mutter.
Okay, so like you could go to a fair or whatever if there's cooking.
Because that's not also b'hanah. The foods there are not also b'hanah.
Even though they're fine.
Now the one place would be with basa b'chola would be a problem. So so you walk into into McDonald's. You need to use the bathroom, right? So let's say you walk into McDonald's and they're frying cheeseburgers. Cheeseburgers are also b'hanah because it's basa b'chola.
Yeah, I feel like that happens all the time when you walk by. You're in the mall and there's a food court.
Right. So, so
the majority of it is probably basa b'chola.
I don't know. probably bitzel, etc. I don't know how much is real bona fide basa b'chola. The rice is basa b'chola, but it has to be meat and not chicken. It has to be that there wasn't shishim. There has to be this.
I'm saying we don't have to assume that those things are happening. Like, I don't have to walk through the food court of the mall being like...
You don't have to hold your nose. You can't actively take a sniff.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds good. That smells good. You can't take a sniff. All right. Okay. Third area, which is an issue, is Recha Milsa. Is in a case where it's a Tanur Sosum, which is a closed Tanur, then we possibly have a Recha as a problem. So the example of that would be a microwave. In other words, you can't stick in milchus and flations in the microwave at the same time. I'm hoping nobody's thinking about the katani doing such a thing. Okay. But again, the issue recha for what's relevant to us is only nisub b'basachas. The main issue, which is recha milchus for us, is that you can't do at the same time milchus and flations. That's the chaschil. But yeah, it might be mutter, but you can't do the chaschil. Okay. The final issue, which is what we're worried about, is the zeya issue. So what's the zeya issue? The zeya issue, halacha says, most foods, whether they're cooking, they're baking, are putting up a certain amount of steam. So minimal amount of steam, that's not what Zeya is. Zeya is that there's a significant amount of steam. A, B, it's that the liquid which is there, the liquid which is relevant to me, it's part of the dish. It's part of the dish, so we consider that Zeya is significant. That gets the same halacha as the food itself. So if the food itself is fleishig, the Zeya is fleishig. If the food is milchig, the Zeya is milchig. So our concern is a person sticks in something, a lasagna, a liquidy lasagna, which is part of the, it's quite a liquidy type of a thing. Stick it in the oven, you bake it. There's zeya of lasagna, which is going to go and be absorbed into the walls of the oven. On the walls and in the walls, there's zeya. Okay? Now I come a little bit later and I put my flesh, I put my chicken over there with a nice big lot of sauce, etc. And it puts out steam. The steam goes into the walls, meets that milk of flavor and it makes a marriage of basa b'chola, and then it comes out again and back into your food. So that's the problem of steam. That's where steam becomes a problem. So we can imagine already that's the problem. So if they're covered and therefore steam which is coming out is minimal, or the food is a dry food which the steam which is coming out is minimal, this issue doesn't apply. Again, we're not talking at the same time, we're talking about one after the other. So theoretically, if I have a fleishiga oven, so I have to worry about the fact that there's any residue. So I have to worry about the residue. The oven should be clean. So the oven is clean. I make sure that my oven is clean. You don't need easy off.
You could just wipe it down.
You just wipe it down. It'd be fantastic. I'm not talking about oven cleaners. So there's nothing bad on the. I would suggest covering the racks because the racks is the direct points where there's contact. So you're putting on the racks. You cover it with some foil. So two layers of foil for sure. You're good. And then you want to cook milchiks in a fleishiga oven, quote unquote fleishiga oven, because you use it for fleishigs. So if it's covered, it's mutter.
Okay. You would cover the racks even if you were covering, even if you were double wrapping the lasagna.
No, there should be a double layer between the lasagna. The cover on top doesn't need a double. Okay. You cover the racks with two layers, or you can wrap the lasagna twice. On the top of the lasagna, you want to put one layer. You don't need two layers. Okay. It's not like the case of, you want to microwave something in a microwave oven. Then you need, tray for microwave.
So you take out the racks, you double wrap it in tin foil, the racks, then a single layer.
You don't need double wrap in. You just lay, it doesn't have to be on the bottom wall.
Lay two sheets on. Then a regular lasagna pan.
Right.
With the cover. And that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Now, and then you're good. Or if you want to even, it's something which is considered a dry milchiga food, so you can do it even open. So I remember last time I said this year, I said pizza is considered a dry food. I remember some ladies got very upset at me. I, there's a lot of steam coming out of the pizza. Pizza's oil is not considered for this purpose. Oil does not have a din of zayim. So that's not our issue. It's water. So pizza is not considered pizza is considered a dry food. So as long as there's no contact, so it's mutter. The only case which is really which I have an issue is I want to cook something open, and it's producing. I want to cook. It cooks better when it's open, or at least the last. And I want it, there's liquid there, so then I can't. Then I have a problem. If there was some point in time this oven was used for liquid fleishigs, so now I want to use it for liquid milchigs. So I have to address the issue by kashering.
Do you need to put the two layers covered, the racks with two layers if it's like pizza?
The covering of the rack issue is a case of the actual residue. If there's actual residue issue, so then you're going to have a problem. I don't care whether it's dry or it's liquid. So I think the best way to deal with that is just cover it twice, and you're okay. You have no shadow about that. Okay, so the only case that you really need to kosher, you need to is if you're going from if fleishige oven to milchige oven or milchige oven to fleishige oven, and you want to use what you want to do is something that's going to be liquidy and it's going to be open, to be uncovered. Interesting. The top of covering. Just so you know, let's say you have a meat pie, you know, with a layer on top. You want to make a meat, you know, something like a chicken pot pie, a meat pot pie. So the layer on top can count as the covering. Unless you vent it, but usually you vent it because you don't want to explode. If you vent it, then it's not considered covering because obviously you're letting the steam out. But if you would ever read, you would feel that you don't need to vent it. You're not creating a slit on top, right? You're just warming it up or something of that sort. So you don't need to, so it's not going to be in there for so long if there was no slits on top. So then you could do that. That's considered that. That would be the covering also, even though the covering is not even foil. The covering is dough. But the dough on top is dry, so that blocks the steam from coming out. Which is why when you open it up, all that steam comes out. You know, you cut it open, all that steam, and you have to be careful. You shouldn't hurt yourself. Okay. So in that situation, so now you're in a situation where you want to go from milchiks to fleishigs, the fleishigs to milchiks, and you want to kosher. So it's self-cleaning. It's a no-brainer. You put it in the self-cleaning cycle. You do not need to complete the cycle. After 1 hour, you can press stop, and it takes a while for the thing to cool down, that it should unlock. But then you don't have to wait till the whole 3-4 hour cycle to be considered sufficient. For non-self-cleaning ovens, how to kosher? So you clean it well. You should not use it for 24 hours. Put it on the highest setting for an hour. Put it on the highest setting for an hour, and then you are good to go. There is some suggestion that possibly it would make sense. If we're worried about the bleas going in through steam, we should take the bleas out through steam. So the way to accomplish that is take a pot of water, stick it in there, put the thing on its highest setting, and let it just boil until it, you know, puts steam all over the place.
But you don't have to do that.
You don't have to. The maker, then you don't have to do that.
No, for a self-cleaning oven, why don't you have to worry about that?
Self-cleaning oven, because the process is Leibun. So Leibun.
But if it went in through steam, then how does it come out through Leibun?
Okay. So in halach, any time that Hagola is, there's a concept, the same way it went in, Hagola can take it out.
Right.
Leibun is considered more effective than Hagola. And the rule is wherever Hagola works, Leibun works.
Okay.
So since it's considered Leibun, now if a case where you traped up your oven, it's a little more complicated. You should definitely ask the shayla point. I'm talking about the case of milk is deflation. The milk, there's no trafe involved over here. In case a person trapes up their oven, you know, that's a little more complicated. So you definitely should ask the shayla point in time. Okay, let's say the person wants to make something parv. The issue here isn't milk is deflation. Is deflation. I want to bake challahs. So I'm making challahs, which I'm going to be using with a milchige meal. So I put my chicken in, and I make my chicken, and I put my meat in, and I make a roast, etc. Now I want to, after that's finished, okay, I want to bake challahs to use with my milchige meal on Shavuos. So the challahs are dry. So over there, I'll just cover the racks and bake my challahs. Let's decide I want to make some fancy parva liquidy type of a dish. Okay, so now it's ready, it's liquidy, and I don't want to cover it, you know, because it's fancy, whatever it is. So now I have a liquid issue. Right? So there's it's a flay sugar oven, and I want to you make this dish that I want to have with milk, it's parv, the dish itself is parv, but I want to eat it with a milk, like a meal. Or vice versa, you know, my oven is milk, and then I want to make something which I want to use with a flay sugar meal. So that situation, again, so you have, in that situation, you do not need the kasher. You wait 24 hours, you do not need the kasher. You cover the racks, make sure everything is clean, you wait 24 hours, and you can bake it in that situation without kasher in the oven. Okay, so for pariv, if it's dry, you don't need to wait 24 hours, like it's even as milk, if it's dry, you don't need to wait 24 hours. If it's liquidy, you wait 24 hours, you do not need the kasher. Am I clear? Yeah. Okay, let's get one more point over here. I just want to talk about, it's common because we're making different things, milk and clay, sometimes you're making something on the stovetop. The range top, however you call it, whatever, the range top, yeah. So you have pots going, and there's a pot which is a milk cooking pot, which is flashing, so obviously you're worried about splattering, that's not a good idea. You don't want something to flood. So you keep them far apart.
How far is considered far apart?
As far as they don't touch.
And what about parv to whatever? Is it the same thing?
You're not mechuyev to. It's a question of just, you know, if it does splatter, you're going to have to deal with it.
Right.
And you want to, you know, keep yourself out. So obviously there's no problem, the issue is going to be contact. there's no issue of recha, because recha is only in a confined area. Is there a problem of zeya? So the problem of zeya is, we assume zeya goes up, and as it goes up it dissipates, it's not a problem. There are two scenarios where zeya is an issue on a range top.
What is zeya?
Zeya is steam. So I have this 16 quart, you know, chicken soup. I have this little thing of milchika sauce right next to it. So it's putting out zeya. That zeya is going up, but there's a pot right next to it. Of a big pot. So they both go up, but as they go up, they spread a little bit. And that's right there touching the space of the pot, which is hot. So you should not put your little milchika pot next to your big fleshika pot. If they're both the same height, that's fine, because they're both the same height, and they're just going to go up in the air. I don't care what they do in the air. That's their business.
What if there's a range over
it? Now, what if there's a hood? Okay, so now... So the next question is hoods.
So buy a house with a hood.
Right. So you come to Rheingold's house, you notice there used to be a hood there. The hood is no longer there. The hood was removed by the Rheingold. By Mrs. Rheingold. So if there's a nice sized distance from the top of the pots to the hood, don't worry about it.
Even if you see that water can collect?
Even if you see water can collect, that's a good, hard question. You're using large pots and the gap is not so big, it's like a little, then you have a problem. Because then we're worried about the zeya going up, condensing, and then dripping back down. Well, you don't know what type of zeya was there yesterday. It might have been milk zeya yesterday and tzveishik zeya today. Another example they have, like some of these fancy... kitchens, they have the racks where you hang your ladles, you know, from the ceiling, you know, or from the, you know, the rack right over your pot. So you have this milk of a ladle over your fleshing a pot. It's not a smart idea, right? Because there's zeya going up. And now, make it like this. If by the time the zeya reaches there, it's no longer yatzeletus, but it will not make the, will not change the status of that, of the utensil.
Oh, so if I touch the thing all the time, water collects there, but it's not yet.
The water collection is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why in a second.
Because then it drips back down.
So here the issue is the belia, the case of the pot was hot. So even if the zeya comes up, but it's hitting a hot pot, it's going to be absorbed into the hot pot. So even though the zeya, the steam itself is no longer hot, but it's a hot pot. But in a case where the steam is... The issue is the steam is creating the problem. By the time the steam gets to the utensil, it's cooled off, you wipe it off, and that's it. You should definitely wipe it off. You have to wash off the surface, but you don't have to worry about it. You didn't change the status of the ladle. The case of the hood where the problem is the following. It's because it goes up there, even if it cools off, but if it collects there and it drifts back down, that's a problem. That's a separate problem. The collection is a separate problem. The other place where you have a problem, which is what a few people have asked me about, is that the oven vents. So where does the oven vent out of? So some ovens vent out of one of the burners. Some ovens vent out of a hole in the back of the stovetop, and there's a little opening there, and the oven vents out of that hole. So if I'm cooking something inside the oven which has a din of zeya, something liquidy which has a din of zeya, and it's venting, and the steam is coming out, and I have a fleishig zeya coming out, and I have a milchik pot sitting there. So somebody came and just asked me to shayla recently. It hit them. They put their milchik pot in the back of the, because you always cook in the back because it's safer for the kids. So, and that's right, and that's where the vent comes out. It comes out right next to that thing. Hot pot, and they notice the steam coming out hitting their pot. And it hit them, of course, the pot was a milchik pot, and the steam was from something inside the oven which was fleishig. I said, okay, you have a problem. If it vents through the burner, and the burner is on, you have no problem. Because halacha assumes that the heat of the burner will burn the zeya before it gets to the pot. So the fire, there's a barrier of a fire. There's a barrier of a fire between the zeya and your pot. That's where the burner is. Now, if the fire isn't on, so then you don't have that, obviously. But usually by that point in time, it cools off enough that it's not an issue. But in a case where the pot itself is hot, so, and the fire is not on, then even if it cools off, but this zeya is hitting this hot pot, and it's getting absorbed into the pot. So that's an issue a person has to be aware of, where your vent is. And if your case where you have the oven is, and the stove is on top of the oven, you have to be aware of the vent issue. There potentially can be some real zeya issues over there. Okay.
What about a double oven?
So, I'm sorry?
The Star K could add something on that recently about different model ovens.
So
you have one fleishig, one milk.
So theoretically, you could have the question where the problem comes up. If it's insulated properly the way it should be, there shouldn't be the bottom of the top oven should not be getting heat. You know, usually there's a gap. I mean, there's usually like a stovetop. I'm assuming I'm not talking about two one on top of the other. There's something in the middle, right?
No.
Which is directly one on top of the other.
It's a double oven.
Yeah,
double oven.
There's the floor of one oven and the roof of the other oven. I mean, there's like this much of a space.
Right. So, the vent. The only issue is probably going to be the venting. I hear the question. I would have to see the reality, like what it looks like. The issue is going to be venting because there's that no man's land between the two of them. The blia will go into the top of the first oven. There's nothing which is going to transfer to the second oven.
No, so usually there's vents at the top of the first and the top of the second. So, small little space.
So now, if there's venting coming out, so then theoretically you could have an issue. Right? If there's venting coming out, you could have an issue.
Why? Because it vents separate.
So if it vents, out towards the outside, that's fine.
If it vents up,
but if some of the venting goes up into the next oven, you have a problem. The one question which I once discussed with the Rabbi Amram Zichlei Lebracha, we actually discussed, was opening doors. Right, the case over there which we discussed was the case we have your stove, you have the range top, and you have some merrily boiling chicken soup, putting out a lot of steam, something like that. And you have a cabinet above. And you open the door, and all this, you see the steam going inside. Now, it's not going to be out to let us bow. But definitely, there's a layer on the outside you have to wash off before you use it. Because the steam has a lot that's considered that it's there. So, you want to use whatever's there for milchik. You have to wash it off before you use it.
I've seen it worse. I've seen, like, if I overboil something, the plates that I have will be wet because so much steam came up on this.
Right, so that steam is... So even if it's not yet celetico, probably the chances are very minimal that it's yet celetico by the time it reaches the plate. So it's not doing anything to the plate, but the band on top you have to deal with. So the next question was...
Even if it dries by the time you use the plates?
Yes. So, you know, you want to store over your... If you have that potential issue... Now, again... Normally, it's the gap is enough that it usually dissipates. The minimal amount gets in there that we're not worried about. The minimal amount we're not worried about. It has to be a significant amount. But if you have a large pot, potentially it's a problem. Now, the scenario which you next deal with is the case of the ovens. You open the door of the bottom one, you know, do you have to worry that it's going to go back inside into the upper one? Chances are no. I don't think you should have to worry about that. Chances are no. And even when it would hit the door of the upper one, you know, you open the bottom one, open the top one, and all the steam comes out, it hits the door. So the door is, so you have a fleshing of door now. But the fleshing of door doesn't make the rest of the oven fleshing. Because the door has two parts to it. So the blee is not going from the front of the door to the back, the inside of the door. It's sort of in parts. So I think probably in the beginning of a situation, it's going to be mutter. I'd be curious to see what they wrote about it. But what they say about it?
I think it was all depending on oven models. I think they were giving you oven models. I don't recall. It came out at before Pesach, I think.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But they had an alert about it.
Right. Okay. I don't think for sure it's, you know, depending how it's built, but I don't hear for sure a major issue unless it maybe have a certain form would be problematic. Okay.